And good morning, everybody. You're listening to the Mighty 690 KGGF. Kyle High with you this morning. It's now time for Greenside Up. And I want to welcome to the studios today, James Coover and the David Scrods. Guys, how are you doing today?
Doing good.
Doing well.
It's good to see you guys today. And before we get started on each of your subjects today, there are a few programs that K-State will be hosting, correct?
Yeah. So the first one is actually this evening. It'll be at 7 o'clock, and we're holding it at three locations throughout the district. So it'll be at the Crawford County Extension Office in Girard, the Twin Valley Electrical Co-op Meeting Room in Altamont, or the Caney Recreation Center in Caney. So there's three different options for you to attend this pasture management seminar and producer roundtable, depending on where you live at, which location is closer to you, or if you do feel more comfortable attending it virtually, you can contact the office and we can send you the link where you can join through Zoom, because the main speaker for this workshop is Walter Fick, which is one of the specialists on campus in Manhattan. So he's actually will be joining us virtually from Manhattan to speak at different locations throughout Southeast Kansas. And the topics being covered will be brush and weed control, fertilization, grazing management, and then, of course, answering any questions that producers have. And then coming up in December, James has a couple of workshops.
Yeah, so like I've talked about for a while now, the State Lines Crops Conference will be on December the 2nd from 10 to 1. And this will be all virtual conference. There won't be any in-person for this one. We'll start off with a grain market update with Dan O'Brien, and then after that we'll talk about the economics of soybean fungicide. After lunch, though, we're going to have our keynote speaker, and we're going to be talking about tile drainage, and then we'll have a producer panel talking about their experiences with tile drainage too. And so this tile drainage professor, he's from Missouri, and we don't really have a whole lot of topics about this very often, so we're kind of looking forward to that one. On December the 8th, we have the corn marketing workshop. And so even though it's for corn, it's actually pretty much for any grain or commodity. It's talking about the actual marketing of these commodity products. It's a real hands-on workshop sort of ordeal. It'll be on December the 8th from 9:30 to 2:30 at the Neosho County Fairgrounds in Erie. And that one actually is in person. And so I'm kind of hoping that everything works out and we can do this one in person. Of course, we'll have to do certain protocols, of course. But that one, there's really no way to do that virtually because this is such a hands-on workshop. So December the 8th from 9:30 to 2:30. And then on December the 17th?
15th.
Yes, 15th now. We're going to be having our... It's a farm secession, so the 12 steps of farm secession. And we're hoping to do a virtual option for this, but there'll be, you know, places that we can, that will come together and have that workshop as well. And so it's what it sounds like. Farm secession is just basically the intergeneration from one to the next and learning how to transfer the farm. And that's, of course, an important topic every year and always. So we're going to have that one.
All right, so it's pretty good workshops going on, and we'll go ahead and get started with you today, David. And what you're wanting to talk about is house mice, and they can be an issue.
Yeah, they can be an issue, especially this time of year as the weather starts to cool off. You know, we're all starting to think about holidays and making plans and preparations for those. Well, different types of wildlife, they're busy preparing for the winter, and some wildlife will migrate south to warmer climates. Others will hibernate, and then some, such as mice, they kind of just stay where they're at, but they look for better housing, I guess you could say, for the winter, and easy access to food so they won't have to go out in the cold weather as much. And it's also with fall and the leaves falling off trees and different bushes, they're also losing a lot of their cover and food source that they would have outside. So this time of year, they are more likely to be moving into your house or shop, barn, really any buildings where they can find a nice warm home for the winter and also have easy access for food. So this time of year, you want to look at those buildings and check for any cracks or holes that you may find that mice could get in through. They can get through pretty small cracks or holes, as long as it's at least a quarter inch wide, which we don't think of being that wide and may not even really notice, especially if it's on an outbuilding or maybe on the skirting under the patio of a house. But mice will find any of those little cracks or holes and see those as an opportunity to move inside for the winter. So the first step is, of course, prevention. So it's looking for those cracks, those holes, and you can block them with steel wool, especially if it's a hole, and that will prevent mice from coming in. Cracks, you can use caulking or something to block those, or even more permanently cover holes or cracks by fixing them with a board or whatever material you have handy. And then after prevention is, of course, or maybe it can also be looked at as another step for prevention, but it's kind of cleaning everything and picking everything up around the outside of your home or building. So while firewood piles, they're really convenient to have them right next to the house, so you're not having to walk too far in the cold to get firewood. And that's one thing that will attract mice to your home, because the wood pile is good cover for them. Well, then they're close to the house, so they might find easy access into the house or see that as a little bit better option since they're already there. So if you're able to, moving wood piles or any piles of scrap material that you may have around your home or shops or buildings, moving those farther away. And then also, of course, cleaning up any excess plant debris or garden material that's kind of died off now that it's fall and turning cold. And then the other thing, mice are looking for an easy source of food. So if you have any pet food or bird seed around, they'll kind of look at that as an all-you-can-eat or an all-they-can-eat buffet type of thing. So if you're able to kind of keep that picked up, and that will help prevent them. And then also storing that pet food or bird seed in secure containers where they won't be able to chew through those bags or get easy access to it. And then after you've kind of taken those steps of prevention, then it's just being on the lookout for signs of mice. So if you notice mice in a house or building, you can get rid of them before even more move in, because once they find a nice warm spot with easy access to food, it's really common for them to basically like tell their friends.
Yeah, and then, it's like, hey guys, yeah, we got this place over here.
Yeah, so then you'll have maybe more mice than you realized in a short amount of time. So recognizing the signs of mice is important. So it's just fresh droppings, gnaw marks. Sometimes, depending on if it's maybe in a shop where there's more dust around, you can even notice tracks of where they've been traveling, and or find nests that they've made of finely shredded paper or other fibrous materials. And then sometimes you can even hear them moving around, especially if they're in walls or ceilings, stuff like that. And then once you see those signs or hear those signs of mice, it's important to then move to population control and reduction. So for that, the easiest way to control mice is with different styles of traps. That way you don't have to worry about the mice dying somewhere from poison, the rodent size.
Right, and then they start
and
getting
then they
that
smell,
odor.
Or yeah, also having those out for mice is also a potential hazard for any pets or small children that are around. So traps are really, they're an easy option, and they're kind of the most recommended because they're more specific to just mice.
Mm-hmm.
And those traps, there's several different options now. There's the sticky traps or live traps or just the traditional wooden snap mouse trap, and you can pick those up at the grocery store or hardware store. And then you can bait those traps. Peanut butter is one I've used before, and it's easy to use and works out well. Or I know some people have even used bacon or seeds and grains. Those are common food sources.
Of course, their favorite, cheese.
Yes, that's the one you always see in cartoons is cheese. And then sometimes if mice, if they're not tempted by food, if they're not hungry, I've also read that you can tie a cotton ball to the trap. And if they're looking for nesting material, that could attract them as well. And then you just want to place those traps along areas where you've seen signs of mice, or you may have even seen them traveling, because that's where they'll be going back and forth. And so in those areas up against walls or in dark areas, because mice, they're most active at night, mm-hmm. or just in the dark where they're not, where they feel more secure traveling back and forth. So if you have maybe a cabinet or something, and then you can put the trap between that and the wall, that's usually a pretty good bet on being able to catch the mice if they're around there.
And one of the traps I was telling you about that I used is, you know, there's also the humane traps, or what it was this plastic cylinder where they, and has a little trap door on it, uh-huh. and they walk in to get the food. And then when they try to get out, that door doesn't swing the other way. So they're kind of trapped in there.
Yeah.
And then you can like take them outside or something like that and flip it over where they can get out. That way you're not killing them. But that's another one that you can use, but you probably need to try to find the areas where they're getting in,
yes,
at
definitely.
And block those off before you do that, because they'll just get right back in.
Yeah.
And then they probably will go, I remember that. I'm not falling yeah. for it again.
Exactly. And then, of course, there's also always cats, especially if you're having more of a problem with mice in
oh,
your
yeah.
barn or shop.
They'll smell a cat and they'll be like, nope, not staying here.
Yeah.
That was one time I was at my parents' house, and I guess there was a mouse in there. And all of a sudden, you see this mouse like try to shoot out across the living room, and all of a sudden, the cat's like, boom, jumps right on it, and then
yeah.
it's funny, kills it right there. And then the funny thing is, what picks it up in its mouth and then drops it at our feet, and then looks up at us like, hey, I got it.
Yeah,
you know, and come to figure out, I guess it's basically saying this, it's a present.
Mm-hmm.
They're basically saying, you're the head of the pride here. We're bringing this to you.
Yeah.
So, which is kind of funny, but they're so proud of themselves when they catch it, though. All right. So again, lots of different ways to prevent mice getting in. Obviously, there'll probably be lots of food out with Thanksgiving and Christmas, so that's another thing that will attract them as well.
Yes.
So be sure to eat if there's any leftover food, get those into refrigerators or into airtight packages, correct?
Yes, definitely is put those in secure containers, move them into the fridge. I know, like you said, especially with Thanksgiving and Christmas coming up, it's common to have snack type foods setting out. So just don't leave those setting out overnight where mice are more likely to find them and enjoy them as well. It's probably not the Thanksgiving guest you had in mind.
Exactly. You don't want those Thanksgiving guests. All right, guys, we do need to go ahead and take a break, but when we come back, we will have more Greenside Up. We'll talk to James Coover. And James, what will you be talking about today?
I'm going to talk a little bit about pretty much the science of wheat survivability over the winter. And then, since it's kind of a dry weather, we're going to talk about terraces, repairing your terraces in the field.
All right. Well, again, we'll have that coming up here in just a bit. You're listening to the Mighty 690 KGGF. And welcome back. It's now time for the second part of Greenside Up here on the Mighty 690 KGGF. Kyle High with you this morning, and in studio with us from the K-State Extension offices, we have James Coover and a David Scrantz. Guys, welcome back.
Yeah, thank you.
Good morning.
All right. Well, James, we're going to go ahead and get to you starting the second part of the program, and you're wanting to talk about wheat survivability and also field terraces.
Yes. And so it's probably too late to plant wheat at this point. It's getting kind of late. It's still a possibility, actually. There have been years where farmers have planted wheat even into December, even during Thanksgiving break, and it does fine. However, we're getting kind of too far, too cold of soil temperatures. It'd make me worried at this point. And also, insurance kind of cut off day is before now too. So you're risking things if you're planting it this late. The thing is that wheat kind of needs a minimum of 4 to 5 leaves and 1 to 2 tillers to have enough energy stored up for winter survivability. There's actually an antifreeze chemical that starts to build up within the wheat once it gets below 50 degrees. And the colder you get, the faster that antifreeze chemical builds up. And it takes a month below that 50 degrees before the wheat is fully prepared for the winter months. After it's fully hardened, it can resist single-digit temperatures. Here in Southeast Kansas, though, we rarely get to that cold of temperatures. I looked it up, and last year, the 2-inch soil depth, the lowest that it got was 34 degrees. So last year we didn't even have frozen soils. So that's the reason why the wheat stayed green pretty much all winter long. Sometimes we never really get that cold, but there are cases. I remember when I was a kid, I mean, we would have a week long where it's well below zero. But you know, the late spring frost is actually much more of an issue when it's coming out of that vernalization stage. And you got a late freeze that hurts it at that point, basically kills the growing point. You can actually have green leaves and still be cold hardy. So just because there's green leaves out there and you have a really cold temperatures, it does not mean that winter kill is going to happen. Here in Southeast, we could easily see green all winter long and just be fine with that. Oddly enough, wheat planted too early, though, has even a higher risk for winter kill. And so the stuff that was planted maybe in early September, but it wasn't actually grazed off, and so it has a lot of growth to it. It's really the plant is coming out of the ground. It's actually increased the height of the growing points, and it has lost a little bit of its capability to survive the winter. So oddly enough, if you plant too early is another chance of it being killed off. Soil moisture helps, and the soil moisture helps because it equalizes the temperatures within the soil. But, I mean, we don't have a whole lot of soil moisture, but we have enough to make that work. So in the spring, as soon as temperatures get above that 50 degrees, it starts to come out of that dormancy. The antifreeze chemical starts to get worked out of it, and it becomes more susceptible to freezing. And that's actually the same with fescue lawns, with ryegrass, pretty much any plant that survives the winter. That process and the chemicals are kind of pretty much the same. It's very similar. And so at this point, probably too late to plant wheat. It's possible. I know some guys are just now getting their soybeans out the field, but it would make me worried after this. It's a possibility, but I don't know that you want to chance that. So besides planting wheat, though, we can take advantage of this dry weather by repairing some terraces. It hasn't rained for a while, but in the spring of last year, we had a lot of rain. We had literally an entire year of rain in just a few months, which, of course, is hard on the terraces. We rarely have a dry winter here in the Southeast. It's usually just mud. We have three seasons. The fourth season is just mud season. Rather than slugging through and feeding cows and doing all that, we might actually have a little bit of a dry winter. And so now's a good time to repair those terraces between the soybeans and the corn. Kansas has nearly 300,000 miles of terraces. We are actually number two in the nation for number of terraces. And so it's a huge practice here. I guess the NRCS just kind of really pushed terraces in this area, and we have a lot of them. So terraces work by making a path within the field that's longer than its original path. And so it slows down the water flow, it reduces water velocity, which therefore reduces its energy to cause erosion. A large part of it is there's three types of erosion: sheet, rill, and gully. A large part of it is preventing that gully erosion, but it has some effect in the sheet and rill erosion as well. Worn terraces, basically terraces that kind of been filled in, they can actually overtop. And so water will literally have so much flow, it will overtop of a terrace. And that's actually makes it even worse than not having any terraces, because you're directing the entire area of water into one specific channel. It makes a huge gully. I mean, it can completely take out a terrace. You lose tons and tons of soil from that one spot. And also, old terraces can pond up water. So even if it's not going to overtop, you'll have wet areas within a field, and when you're working it, you'll have to slog through that wet area. Some farmers start to go around it, makes it even worse. And so it's also another practice of making it easier on you to have the terraces in place. And the reason why terraces wear out, A, is a little bit because of natural erosion, but also because farmers mess up their terraces when they drive over them. And so when they till their terraces perpendicular to it rather than parallel to it, they cut the ridges out and they fill in the gully or the terrace channel. And so over time, and it doesn't take all that much time, the terraces just disappear in a way. It's hard not to with the large equipment that we have now. I mean, you can't get that 20 foot 4 or 36 or that huge tillage equipment around that field, especially when you have the tiny little fields that we have here, a 10 acre field. I mean, you go around it 3 or 4 times and you're almost done. So right. it's hard to farm the contours. And so the terraces disappear. Minor reshaping of a field, basically building the terraces back up, that can be done with tillage equipment that we have on a tractor. There are some plows that are actually designed to do this tillage. They're designed to kind of move dirt from one area to another, but you can use a regular plow as well. Probably not a vertical tillage or anything. It has to be one of the more traditional plows or a blade on the back of a tractor. If it's a large issue, you're probably going to have to hire a bulldozer. And those bulldozer guys, they kind of know how things are done and they know how to shape the terraces because that's half of what they do is doing that stuff. And so now's a good time to talk to them. I know the bulldozer guys are very busy. They've been cleaning ponds all during, you know, because it's been dry. They've been having a lot of work to do. But terraces, they're designed for a 10-year rain event. And so the maximum rain that we're expected over a 10-year period, that's the height of the terrace. And that's around 5-inch rain over a 24-hour period. So it's a pretty heavy rain for those terraces are designed for. The method of repairing these is to basically dig the soil out of the channel of the gully and onto the ridge on both sides. But you have to make sure everything's kind of even and smooth, because if you make a gully within the channel or a gully on the backside of the slope, you're going to end up channeling water into one specific area, which is going to erode out and create a big issue within the field. That's going to be hard to get tillage equipment across.
Right.
And so you just kind of have to make things nice, smooth, and look almost like a natural hill within the field. Although no matter how you get this done, it is important to protect your work once you get it done. And so that means covering it in some fashion. Something needs to be growing there. Otherwise, the spring rains are just going to undo all the work that you did. And so this is cover crops. This is reduced tillage. This is farming on the contours as much as possible, if you can do that. If you're interested in, of course, you know, adopting no-till as well. Keeping something on there is the most important part. There should be no such thing as recreational tillage. That's really what the goal is. If you get something done this winter, you can plant some spring oats in February or March. That can be a good cover crop before we plant into soybeans later on. And there's a lot of methods to make that work. There's probably not enough time to plant spring oats before corn, because corn, there's only like a month and a half period there, so nothing's really going to grow in that time period. But there's lots of other options. So if you need more information on repairing your terraces, K-State Extension, we've got publications and all sorts of stuff to help people that. And there's actually some videos as well. It's a lot easier to see rather than actually just see it on a piece of paper. And of course, NRCS, Natural Conservation Service, they're the ones who have created a lot of these terraces and actually have the technicians to go out and look at this stuff. So that is a huge resource for that kind of work too. So,
all right. Some great information there, James. And we thank you guys for coming on. Before we get out of here though, maybe if somebody didn't catch in at the very start of the show, there are a couple of workshops you guys are hosting.
Yes. The first one is actually this evening, and that is the Pasture Management and Producer Roundtable. and they'll be covering brush and weed control, fertilization, grazing management, and then, of course, answering any questions that producers may have. And that will actually be held in three different locations in the district. So it will be at the Crawford County Extension Office in Girard, the Twin Valley Electric Co-op Meeting Room in Altamont, and the Caney Recreation Center in Caney. So if you have any questions and would like to register for this workshop, you can call the Altamont Extension Office at 620-784-5337. And of course, if you're not comfortable attending an in-person workshop, if you give that phone number a call, we can also send you a Zoom link so you can attend that workshop virtually.
All right, very, very cool. And you got a couple more there for us, James?
Yes, and so on December the 2nd, we're going to have a completely virtual State Lines Crop Conference. And we'll start off by talking about the green market update, the economics of the fungicides. But after lunch, we're going to be talking about tile drainage. And State Line, that means actually with Missouri, they do a lot of tile drainage over there. So they're going to come over here and kind of talk a little bit about it as well. So on that's on December the 2nd from 10 to 1 o'clock. On December the 8th will be the corn marketing workshop. And this marketing workshop, it can go for more than just corn, pretty much any grain commodity. That will be on December the 8th from 9:30 to 2:30 at the Neosho County Fairgrounds. And this will be an in-person and hands-on workshop.
All right, so some great stuff there, great workshops. And guys, if anybody wants to get in, get a hold of you guys, if they have any questions about the workshops or anything else, how can they get a hold of you guys?
They can get a hold of us by calling any one of the extension offices. I'm usually in the independence office at the moment, and the phone number for that office is 620-331-2690.
Yep, and I'm usually in the Girard or the Erie office. The one for Girard is 620-724-8233.
All right, guys. Well, again, thank you so much for coming on today. We really do appreciate it. We love having you guys on, and we'll see you guys again next week.
Thanks for having us.
All right, we're going to go ahead and take a break, and when we come back, we're going to start Open Line. You are listening to the Mighty 690 KGGF here on this beautiful hump day morning.